Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Includes Podcast presented by Proximal Edge. I am your host, Marlene Marino, and I'm so excited. I mean, I know I say this every single episode, but today I'm even more extra excited. I have our first guest, Mr. Brian Cui, my friend. Guys, he has been instrumental in this podcast and getting the word out, and just he has helped me so, so much. So here is Brian. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Marlene. Thank you for having me. It's great to be on here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here. So, Brian, I have lots of questions for you.
Oh, boy. Here we go. You have lots of questions. I see them.
Yes. And you know, and I think as we go through, more questions might come up. So just be on the lookout.
Oh, my gosh. Really? Okay. I'll do my best. I'm used to asking the questions, but I guess answering the questions, I'll do that today.
Oh, well, you can ask too if you want to. I mean, this is a partnership. I said it in every episode. We have a partnership. We're going to do this together. How's that?
Okay, perfect. Sounds good.
So, Brian, how did you get started in healthcare? Let's start from the beginning. Let's bring the human into the podcast.
How did I get started in healthcare? Oh, boy. You know, first of all, my family, at least the female side, is mostly nurses, you know. So my background, I'm Filipino. So my mom's a nurse. My wife's a nurse. My mother-in-law is a nurse. My cousins are nurses. My sister is an LPN. So, you know, I was surrounded, you know, with healthcare. And, you know, I don't know if you listen to Joe Coy, the comedian. He always makes jokes about, you know, Filipinos just being nurses and not pursuing their pursuing their dreams, you know. And here, look, I actually have a poster right there. If you see there, right there,
yes.
For those that are, I'm just showing her on video. I was in Tampa before all of this pandemic hit, and I was front row center. So he was right in front of me.
Wow.
And so he looked at me, and as part of his joke, he points at me, "What hospital do you work at?" I said, I used to work at a hospital, but I don't work at a hospital. He says, "Wow, that's unheard of." So he's like, "Oh, well, that joke kind of went out the window." So he pointed at my wife and he says, "Oh, what hospital do you work with?" And she says, "She works for Orlando Health." He's like, "Oh, okay." And so I guess I kind of broke his joke right there. So anyways, side story, that was a side story. But in terms of healthcare, I've been surrounded with it. So when I went into college, I knew for whatever major I was trying to get into, I needed to get into healthcare. I mean, I didn't see it any other way. My initial major was physical therapy. I went to Florida International University thinking, I'm like, boy, I'm going to be a physical therapist. And then my mom says, "No, physical therapy, it's too saturated right now." I'm like, "Oh, great. Thanks for telling me that now. Now I have to change it." And so I was stuck, and I'm like, what do I do? And nursing was the last thing that I wanted to do. I am not going to be the typical Filipino guy pursuing a nursing degree. So I went from physical therapy. I looked at, what is it? Biomedical engineering. I looked at pre-med. I'm like, oh no, not pre-med. I settled down. I'm like, okay, let's just do nursing. Forget it. I'm just going to do it. Right. And then I didn't do so great in the prerequisites, you know, like microbiology was the one that really, really, really messed me up. And then before, I think the requirement is that you have to have a C. You can't have a C. You cannot have a C.
Wow.
Getting into the program. And I missed it by 1 point. And I'm like, oh my God. You know, like what do I do now? And so I went back to career services trying to find a major. And I actually was gonna I actually was thinking about medical science, doing the laboratory work. I'm like, that's not bad. Okay, I could handle processing urine and blood and pathology. That sounds pretty cool. But then the program at FIU, they closed down as I was getting in. I'm like, you know what? So I think that was a sign. So I went back and I'm like, what other healthcare programs does this school have? Because, you know, everything that I don't qualify for. And then I stumbled onto health information management. And so I was looking at the pamphlet. I was sitting there. I'm like, what are all these things? And then you come up with the AHIMA pamphlet. And it was this formula that just kind of popped out at me. The formula was healthcare plus technology equals success. I'm like, okay, I'm sold. Because I'm sold. I'm like, fine. Because all of my colleagues and friends and classmates, their majors were, back in the day, I graduated in 1998. Everybody was MIS. I forgot what was it called. Management Information Systems. Everybody that was their degree. I'm like, boy, everybody is Management Information Systems. I actually looked at it and I'm like, it already sounds saturated because everybody that I know is MIS, you know? So I'm like, let me go a unique route and let's do, instead of MIS, I'm going to do HIM, H-I-M, Health Information mm-hmm. Management. And so, that's how I got a taste into healthcare. At the time I was working at, where was I working? I was working at Walmart. And as I got into the program, I got a job as a admissions coordinator for a long-term care facility in South Florida. Mm-hmm. And that was at least my first taste of it, dealing with patients, dealing with other people, dealing with administrator. And then that didn't work out because, I don't know, it just didn't work out with the school load and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I found myself working at a restaurant. And then there's just a short stint of that. And then I worked for, as a radiology film library clerk. So that's really way back, you know, in the film library days. So wow. Like, you know, so now when you think about radiology, you're thinking about the patient archival system, PACS, the digital radiology films. But back mm-hmm. then it was just regular films. And I was the one who filed it and whatever. And I think I got my first taste of the electronic health record when they upgraded their system from the, you know, the DOS system, you know, typing in
yes.
all of that and the big humongous monitors. And then we started to upgrade into PACS. I'm like, oh, and so everything became flat screen. It's just, oh yeah, yes. You see all of this, you see this entire film library. We could put this into one server. I'm like, you're kidding me, right? And so, you know, and at the same time, I was going through school and I'm like, oh, this is all making sense. And so all of the stuff that I was learning, I was trying to not really apply. I just wanted to see what it looked like. The terms mm-hmm. and definitions that they were teaching me at school, I was like, okay, this is what it looks like. This is what it looks like. This is how it connects and so forth. And then from there, I graduated. I did my internship at the same hospital that I worked at, but for the HIM department. I helped them out setting up the remote program. Okay. Meaning that, you know, all of the medical coders and, you know, HIM analysts were on site. I was there to help them set it up at home. The technology back then was 56K.
Oh my goodness.
So the funny thing is the HIM director for the internship said she told me to go to the IT department. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm gonna go, you know, on my own to the IT department. And he showed me the remote technology. And then wow. I laugh at it now because, you know, like, hey, I'm going to show you this. And so he pressed the button here. And then, you know, the technology was remote desktop. So basically you're accessing through 56K modem with the little, and then you're accessing another computer. It's not a server, not a cloud. It's now another computer. And so I'm like, wow, that's great. That's really fast for 56K. You know, like, it took like 10 minutes to get on there. And then so that was the interesting story about the internship. But anyways, because of the internship, I got in as a HIM technician. So really just a HIM clerk, picking up discharge records, checking them in, etc. And then I got my RHIA, and then I got really, I don't know, I just got antsy. I'm like, I got my RHIA. I should be like a director position right now, man. Yes. So I went on, Career Builder back in the day. And I'm like, I'm just going to look for HIM director position. I don't care. And I'm going to apply to them. And I got a shot as a HIM director.
Nice.
For a jail system. So a lot of the icebreaker that I usually tell people, I used to work at jail. And I'm like, it was a 5 hospital jail system in South Florida. It was for over 40 employees. The operations ran 24/7. Wow. I mean, I had no management experience, and they gave me this job. I'm like, oh, okay. There's like, okay. And I talk in other, in my podcast with a leadership mentor, and I told him about it. I said, to me, it was like a slap of reality. Like, you think you're ready for management until you actually are in management. And, I told him I had to lock myself in my office. I actually have the book that I grabbed because I'm setting up my office. I grabbed this book. Look how old this book is.
Wow.
I keep it, it's like the Bible, like the gospel, when you go to church. So I took this book. I went in my office as I'm getting paid for this. I'm not going to do this in my house. I'm going to get paid for this. I'm going to look over what I need to do and try to understand it. So I only lasted a year. So, but I did everything I could, because the issue was back then is that the technology didn't scan any records. They were housing the records.
Oh, wow.
And the problem is that when they were inventorying the records, they didn't keep track of it. So they didn't keep track of records through 1996. So this is me working at 2005. I have to backlog all the way to 1996. I have to look at records in 1996 and know where they are. Nobody knew where they were. They knew it was in a warehouse. But once you get to the warehouse and the warehouse
somewhere,
it's like going to Amazon. You're like, okay, where do I start? Where do I find this one piece of paper that I need for a release of information request? I don't know. And so I had to pull this guy. He had to grab a pallet jack, and it was just a to do. So I spent the year inventorying the record, developed. I was about to, and they were filing, we talk about terminal digit and all of that stuff back in the day, but they were filing by last name. So could you imagine how much Rodriguez, all the popular last names? So R was very thick, W was super thick. It was horrendous. And through 1996, I'm like, we need to start scanning. And so when I brought this proposal to them, they're like, we don't have the budget for that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to deal with this. And so, anyways, the hospital that I work for that I interned with, they actually called me back and they said, hey, we have a CDI position for you that you might want to consider. I'm like, what? And so I do a presentation about bridging the coding and the CDI. And the story is that when I was working in HIM, before I left, the CDI consultant was just coming in. And so I was looking at it and I'm like, ooh, I don't know if I want to be CDI, because I saw was like the coders and the CDIs were just like, at wits at each other. They were like, very a lot of conflict. And I'm like, I don't want that. And so when they called me up, the HR person, she says, hey, we got a CDI position for you. I'm like, are you sure you have the right person? And he says, yeah, we know you have worked for the system. I'm sure you know the system. The HIM director, the administrative director, knows you. Mm-hmm. You have your RHIA, which is the minimum requirement that we require. And we desperately need CDIs in this role, because they were offering a bonus. That's number one. I'm like, okay, fine. Like, okay.
What else you got?
I said, what else do you got? Oh, it's probably more pay than what you're making. I'm like, okay. And so I knew the healthcare system also had good benefits. I'm like, good, because I just had my son, and you know, he was very sick. Like he had like febrile seizures. He had like what did he have? He ultimately had infected ears. He had the tube replaced. He was just to do within the first 2 years of his life. Now he's strong like an ox. You can't even get him sick. He's turning 16 in March.
Wow.
So anyway, so I took the CDI position, did it for 12 years. And it wasn't until, and I'm probably going to have to answer one of these questions, but it was somewhere around 2000. So 2006, I started as CDI. And then 2015, before all of this ICD-10 stuff became about, I decided to get my CDIP. Because I wanted to kind of branch out. Mm-hmm. But recruiters were telling me, oh, no, you don't have an RN, but you look more marketable if you have a CDI credential. I'm like, okay, I'll get a CDIP, no problem. Yes. And I got it, and I still had that issue. So because of that, then I'm like, man, I'm getting antsy here, because where am I want to do something. I didn't think the job was boring. I just need something to challenge me. And so that's where the podcast thing, no, not really podcasting. It was tutoring first. It was medical coding tutoring. And then I created Medical Coding Geek. Then I created the Facebook groups. Then I got really bored again. And I'm like, okay, how do I challenge myself? Because this community that I'm creating, like a snowball, is just kind of doing it on its own. And I need to kind of like stir the pot a bit. I'm like, okay, let's do a podcast. Yes. And then I'm like, how do I do podcasts? so that's another story within itself. But I released a podcast in 2017. I moved up here to Central Florida, because I'm originally from South Florida. Okay. And I got a new job as a clinical validation auditor now. And still doing podcasts, still connecting with CDI professionals. And gosh, I like what I do now. And like, you know, I'm looking into trying to get into appeals now. Nice. Because now I work for, as I labeled it, the dark side, because I don't work for the hospital. I work for the payer.
The dark side, truly.
I got like the dark side, because apparently nobody really likes us. But I like to see it from both sides, the provider side, as they would say it, and then the payer side. It's just a nice angle. Yes. That's about it. That's my healthcare. That's my healthcare history. How long did that take? 30 minutes?
I think we're going to do like 13 episodes. What do you think?
Oh my gosh.
Wow. No, but I mean, I see how you've transitioned, and you want to do a good job. You want to do the best job that you can, but you also want to be challenged. You're like, what's next? What else? How can I be of more value? Because it's not just for you that you're doing it. You're doing it also for other people. Right. So that's amazing. It's pretty amazing. So you mentioned CDI there a couple of times, and some people say, okay, what is CDI? It's documentation improvement, but what... So the podcast is includes, because I wanted it to be inclusive for everybody, since you have the best name for a podcast. I'm just saying, you took it.
I know. I had a conversation with another colleague, and she said, you have the best name. I wish I, you know, but to the story of the name, and I'm going to get to your question, but the name Not Ulcer Classified, I actually had that name when I first started a blog. It was called NEC. It was a blog. I used Blogger. Remember Blogger, the Google platform for blogging?
A while back.
And I'm kind of dating myself back then, but that's how it started. And then when I started the podcast, I'm like, I think I'm going to take that name back. And so that's where Not Ulcer Classified came.
Perfect. Yeah, but you have the best name. So tell us a little bit about what CDI is, because we have a lot of like newer coders also listening to the podcast. And there is also a lot of myth about what CDI is, and also how even a coder can transition. Because like you said, it's always been, well, you have to have an RN background. So I'm going to add like those questions kind of together, because I think they kind of feed a little bit off of each other.
Okay. I'll answer those three questions. We'll check them off. 1, 2, 3. All right. So what CDI is, CDI, the way I explain it is like, you know, we talk about nurses, we talk about coders. To make it simple, if you took a nurse and a coder and they had a baby, it would be CDI, because it really is, as I would explain it, bridging the gap between the clinical side and the coding, right? And so the happy medium between both the clinical and the coding is the documentation. So mm-hmm. that's why it's called clinical documentation integrity. It used to be called improvement. Mm-hmm. But when you focus on the documentation, and the thing with coders is that, from what I understand and what I've taught, if it's not documented, you don't code it. But the problem is that if it's documented, it's not sometimes it's not necessarily should be coded.
Correct.
because of the missing piece of the clinicals. But the coders don't, they know there's a guideline on this. You can't code from labs. You can't code from radiology. But then you have people like me on the dark side, you know, sending denials, because when a doctor documents something, but it's not clinically present, that's the problem. And so when we have that problem, and the denial letter is sent, who do they blame? They blame the coders, you know, like, yes. And then they fall back on that guideline. Well, we're not supposed to code from labs. We're not supposed to code from radiology.
On
well,
page 20.
Right. And, I think that guideline shoots the coder's foot, because, you know, it just like it, I felt it kind of like held them back. Like you mm-hmm. can't go beyond your role as just see what is documented, assign the code and move on. So that's what CDI is. Now, to answer your question, how can a coder transition to CDI? Well, let me tell you how I got into CDI. I came into CDI with nada. So my focus was, first of all, when I got out of college, I'm like, I hate coding. I totally despise it, especially CPT. CPT is horrendous, right? Oh, even though I got good grades, but I never saw like me doing it. You know, it's like me as a medical coder, you know. But I got into CDI. Very zero clinical experience aside from understanding, you know, the suffix ITIS means inflammation. That's all I knew. And I had very basic coding skills. I knew how to assign a code. I had zero knowledge of DRGs. When they trained me, they were laughing at me because like, aren't you supposed to know what DRGs are? I have no clue what they are. And the consultant and the colleagues that were training with me, they were like, where did they get this guy? You know? And so
you were willing to learn too. So that's
that's what I portrayed in the interview. It's like, first of all, I was very upfront. I think that's a tip that I would tell people. Be upfront. Like tell mm-hmm. them you don't have the basic skills, but I'm willing to learn. And so I told them, I think I'm afraid of this position, but I think, you know, there's no, I mean, I am open to take it. I'm open to learn. And I told, you know, when you talk about how you handled issues, they always ask those questions. And so mm-hmm. I talked about that 1 year stint in the jail system of fixing everything. And so like, okay, I think if you can fix something in a jail, I think you can fix it. You can fix
Absolutely.
It. You can, if you can deal with inmates, you know, and their stories, I could tell, you could deal with physicians, you know, so, you know, and deputies and all that. It's a tough environment. I'm sure he could deal with physicians. I'm like, okay, so maybe that's why they hired me. Anyways, so like when I first started CDI, they paired me up with a nurse. And so that's how I learned the clinical side. Wow. And so later on down the line, I started asking the other nurses because they kept on hiring nurses into the role. And I was one out of three HIM coding professionals in the team. It was a team of 12, four to five hospitals in the system. And I was in the main one, the level one trauma center. So I was right in the thick of it. Like, you know, everything that you could think of in coding, you're exposed to that. So that helped me out a lot. And getting exposure to cases, level one trauma, neuro ICU, open heart, cardiac cats, oncology, psych, med surg, a stroke unit, ortho neuro. I mean, you name it, I've seen it. I've seen it. I could talk about it all day. So the repertoire of all of these different types of cases were great. Now, I understood it from a coding perspective. Mm-hmm. But I also had to learn from a clinical perspective. So again, you know, nurse and CD and coder, you have to understand both sides. So like there's two hats as a CDI that you need to do. So it was at one point that the HM department was like very behind in their inpatient coding. And they asked, well, why don't you ask some of the CDIs to kind of cross train? And so when they asked the CDIs to cross train, nobody raised their hand.
Oh my goodness.
Raised their hand. Like, anybody want to volunteer? And I looked around. I'm like,
anybody?
Okay, I'll do it. Right. And so I spent a year doing inpatient. So I was so fortunate that it was before they went home. So they were all there, you know, they were all there. You're talking about 20-30 years of experience per inpatient CDI, inpatient coder that I had access to. So I had one of the lead coders, and she would check over my work. I would go through everything. Like even in a CDI, you're only limited to a specific set of cases, right? Like Medicare cases, you only have like a specific, population health, right? But then when you get into coding, you're doing everything. OB, neuro, psych, inpatient, rehab. I mean, everything that you see, the Medicaid population, I mean, the Medicare population, the Medicaid population, yes, they're totally different. The third party payer, health population, totally different. Yes. So like you're getting a whole, I my repertoire increased from doing inpatient. So I went back, my coding skills was so much better. I knew how to navigate the DRGs. I understood the CCs. I understood the MCCs, right? So that's how I got better. And then, you know, I think when I first started CDI also, like I was in the middle of a lot of changes now. This is before ICD-10. We were still under ICD-9. We changed the MS-DRG system. We went into ICD-10. I was there when they transitioned, they started to use APR DRGs with severity of illness or risk of mortality. So I was there, I was in it. So I was able to like experience it. But in the same time, when I'm experiencing it or anything that I try to learn new, I don't know. So what I try and do is, because during that time also, I was also an instructor. I was a health information technology instructor at the same time of working that. So my question would always be, if I'm learning something, in order for me to test myself and say that I knew what I knew, mm-hmm, you have to teach it. So the best way of telling yourself, you know, this stuff, or maybe realizing what you don't know, is when you teach it. So when you teach it, and I was teaching it in front of students, so this was live, like, you know, I was teaching concepts and then I would kind of pause and like, oh, I don't know. Right. So I would catch myself. I'm like, okay, and then as you know, whatever you don't know, then that's where you have to fill in the gaps. And that's, mm-hmm, you know, if I'm trying to teach a concept, there's always a specific, it's like a story. There always has to be a beginning and an end. Correct. Right. So the question for transition, if it's a possibility, as I've heard cases where coders do cross training in CDI. Mm-hmm. If you can, talk to them. Like, hey, I want to learn CDI. I want to see what you guys do. At least just see it, you know. And then, you know, it would spark your curiosity, and you know, the curiosity would then develop, you know, result in research, and then you get passionate about it. Mm-hmm. Understand not just your coding guidelines, but also your clinical guidelines. Boy, there's a lot of clinical guidelines, and they're always, they're always changing. One resource that I can suggest that I've seen is UpToDate. A lot of the physicians use that to kind of get themselves, you know, abreast of what's happening, you know, especially with COVID. I mean, there's a lot of changes in that. I've heard on another podcast, you know, especially coding changes, like for cardiac arrest and cardiogenic shock, the excludes knows there was a change in that. Mm-hmm. So how do you differentiate that clinically, right? So whenever there's also a coding change, how does that look like clinically? And then when you understand that clinically, that enables you to understand how can I communicate that with a physician on their level? Because, mm-hmm. you know, I see queries and I could tell when they're written by a coder because there's no level of clinical validation in there. There's no level, and I go through this presentation, there's no sophistication in the query, mm-hmm. right? So I'm like, oh, this is not a query that you want to ask. Like, you know, so that those are some of the things. So the clinicals help with the query, help with the communication with the provider. The third question, what is the one common myth that CDI professions that you want to debunk is that, and you know the answer right? because you see me on LinkedIn, is that, I get this a lot, is like, oh, only RNs can do CDI. I'm like, please, you know, yes. Come on, really? So let me tell you the story how this myth came about, because back in 2010, was it 2010? Yes, 2010 was the rise of the recovery audit program by Medicare, right? Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. they had the RAC audits. So what had happened is that the RAC auditors, the contractors, these outside companies that they hired, CMS hired, they hired nurses, right? They hired only nurses, right? That had a coding background. That's why you see a lot of CDI consultants. They're just nurses and physicians with coding background, right? Mm-hmm. So if you see this as a hospital, like they're attacking you, I guess, figuratively speaking, then the defense would be to recruit the people who are attacking you, and that would be nurses. Mm-hmm. And so this was like a big change in where, you know, they used to hire medical coders and nurses into these roles. And then, you know, I just was so unaware because I was in this position for 9 years.
Yes.
9 years, right? And then I'm like, 9 years? I'm kind of getting itchy. I want to do something else aside from all of this stuff. I because the thing is that when you work for a hospital for so long, you know that hospital, you know that, yes, healthcare systems documentation, you know the type of cases that they have. Now that I'm I work for, you know, a company that is national, I see cases nationwide. You see that, you know, the documentation is not the same everywhere else. You know, it's mm-hmm. it's just all over the place. It's really bad. It really is bad. Yes. and because it's like, you know, not everybody does the same thing. That's the problem. But you know, because of that, then recruiters, you know, they picked up on it. There was a great need for CDI. And then recruiters were saying, well, no, you need to be an RN. And then I got into the recruiters and I passed the interview. I passed the exam. I passed the second interview. I was ready to go. Like, oh, we just have to place you. And then, you know, unfortunately, I get these calls like, you know, the contract wants nurses. I'm like, you're kidding me, right? I passed everything, man. I passed everything. And I got to a point where I felt like, am I pigeonholed in just this facility? You know, I can't go anywhere else. And that's where, you know, it sparked a real rage in me to go onto social media. I'm like, look, this is ridiculous. You know, and I went to Actis. I talked to Brian Murphy, who's the director. I got him on my podcast. I got on his podcast. and I started to call out like companies, mm-hmm. like, look, these are companies that are just hiring RNs, and I think that's not fair. And so because of that, other people within the community that are HIM, they started to join the fight, I guess I would say, or join the cause that, look, we need to have diversity. Mm-hmm. And because of that, there's been a big push into diversity. And one of the biggest hospital chains, I'm going to just say it, Mayo Clinic, right? I found one where I looked at the job description. It was so diverse, not just to include medical coding and nursing, but also ancillary, like respiratory therapists, right? And so, you know, could you imagine also LPNs, you know, just a wide variety of people who have the ability to understand the clinical side, but also mm-hmm. understand the coding side. But, you know, now I guess it's more competitive now because of all of this. Now you have to have both, and you have to be proficient in both. But, you know, there are hospitals out there that will hire and teach, right? Mm-hmm. So a friend of mine who was a nurse, they took him in with no coding experience, right? The same thing also, you know, a recent graduate, they were considering, you know, for a CDI position. So it's there. And again, as you mentioned before, I think it's all about the interview process. Are you open to learn? And so when you present yourself and you give them case studies, CDI is all about case studies.
Yes.
Give them a case study of what you've done and, you know, go through the list of how you do that. They will see that and say, okay, if they can, if that's a tough situation, this seems like, you know, very menial to them. And I'm sure they could do great dealing with physicians, dealing with nurses, dealing with other people. And that's the key with CDI, is a lot of interpersonal skills. So with that, and when I learned all of that, I'm like, I think I need to, I was itching for more interpersonal skills, you know? So, you know, and that's where the podcasting came about. So that's how it is. You know, RNs, anybody could do the job as long as they're open to educate, as long as they're open to do that. So for coders, you can be a CDI. And I do, you know, APC presentations nationwide. And that's my message. Look, you guys can do it. You guys can do it. I listened to a presentation where a coder says, well, you know, nurses make the best CDIs. I'm like, oh no. Like, you're kidding me. You're just hurting yourself. You know, you're really hurting yourself. Coders can do it. And that's even for coders, I'm trying to spread the message. Nurses, I'm spreading the message. And in the upper management, I'm trying to spread that message as well.
Absolutely. And yes, you have to have the desire to learn and to want to do more, but I think that sometimes we put ourselves in a little bubble. So I think that's also part of the problem. Mm-hmm. This is my little bubble. I'm a coder. This is the only things that I can do. But it's you know, and I said it on a previous episode. I'm like, you can do whatever you set your mind to do with hard work. You can make, you can get there. You can absolutely get there.
Yeah, it's possible.
Wow. Awesome. 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 So what are some of the best resources that have helped you along the way? I know you shared your Bible. I saw it.
That's why I helped. So for those that are listening, since this is not video recorded, it's a HAM textbook that I had. Gosh, what year was this? I was in the HAM program in 2001 to 2003. So this is a book called Health Information Management of a Strategic Resource. So this was the RHIA book before the AHIMA publication that they have now. So this was it's a green book with gold lettering. It basically has everything, but it's so outdated. You're talking about, you know, filing terminal digit, calculating file space. I'm like, you know, this a microfiche. What the heck, you know? So this is I keep it there. Gosh, another book. Something that outside of like HIM and coding, aside from code books, whatever. I hold on to it because it saved me as a manager. So I hold on to it. Another book that I have that's helped me is The 4-Hour Work Week. I don't know if you've heard of that. The author is Timothy Ferriss, which, by the way, kind of helped me, you know, kind of build out the plan for, you know, this podcast, doing the medical coding geek, all of that stuff. But he also did a podcast on his own. So that I modeled a lot of the stuff that I did and trying to understand what he did with this. So, you know, when you tell me you listen to me and kind of get motivated to create your podcast, I had to listen to him along with others and to create my podcast. So Tim Ferriss along with others, but Timothy Ferriss was the one that really sparked it. So that's another book. Another book that I had, I don't know if it's a reason, but I'll just say book. There's another one, Made to Stick by Chip, Dan Heath, Dan and Chip Heath. So this helped me with my communication, not in a way that you've heard me tell a lot of stories. So a lot of the stuff that I do is story based. So that book kind of told me, like, if you really want to connect with your audience and develop a sense of engagement and relatability, tell a story. And, yes. you know, that's, so I've always, I turned it around. Stories for many is case studies for our profession. So I always say, I have a case study to present to you in my presentation. So I have others.
What's the name of that book? Because I'm going to have to write that down.
Made to Stick. The cover I think it's a light switch with a duct tape on it. So it's made to stick. Yes. And then I don't know if it's a resource, but it's the same thing like this one here. It's an old textbook that I have. See the same thing? It's like old yes. Bible. I keep this because it's called Improving Quality, A Guide to Effective Programs, second edition. It's so old.
Wow.
It's published in 1997, but I hold on to it. This book and this class helped me. It's funny because it helped me question research, mm-hmm. question mm-hmm. the results of quality. If somebody's presenting 100% rate in their quality scores every month, I'm like, that's not How? Right. There's something fishy about that score. Yes. And so it always told me to question it and question the resource and always validate your resource. Always get the firsthand research. What's funny now is that I went yesterday to my son's, it's called Diploma Night, and he's part of the International Baccalaureate program for the nice. School over here. And they put up a presentation and they says, well, one of the things that we will teach is to question the resources. I'm like, boy, I wish I had that in high school.
Awesome.
You know, so I had this in my third year in college. And so now they're teaching this and for, my son's just turning, 16. I'm like, gosh, it's great. So, that's another book there. But those are the top two books for me, aside from these old, Bibles here, The 4-Hour Work Week. I mean, it's updated now, but he has a podcast now. What's mm-hmm. great too is that with this, because of his podcast, he took the content from the podcast and created two more books out of it. So,
yes.
You know what I'm talking about? I think that the Tools of Titans, and I think he's creating another one. So, could you imagine with your podcast how much content you can create and then create your own book? That's wow. That's going to be spectacular.
Yes. Something to look forward to, Brian. Yep.
One day.
Yes. You can start. I'll help you. So you told me about the resources. So what about people? Three people that even were the most influential to you, either personally or professional, even both. Because sometimes we need those mentors. We need somebody to look at us from the outside in, because sometimes, like I said, we're in that bubble and this is all we can do. But we sometimes don't see our own potential.
Mm-hmm. Who have most influential? The first one has to be my coding instructor, even though I hated coding when he taught it, but his background is the same thing. His career path became my career path for some yeah. reason, because that's all I knew. Mm-hmm. I knew because he knew how to teach. He knew how to connect. Before he taught, before he was a quality and data quality manager for, the hospital in South Florida, he was a teacher up in New York. And so he taught and then he worked in data quality. And, he just, for me, he's from Trinidad, and he has so much charm in how he teaches, how he connects with the students. So I think that's where I kind of emulate from. And my wife, mm-hmm. Because we were in the same program, just so you know, we were in the same program, and then we eventually got married. So she knows him, and she says, you're turning into, his name is Elton Cuss, you're turning into Mr. Cuss, Professor Cuss. I'm like, oh, okay. Wow. He had a bald head. I'm like, I think I'm going the same route too. So that's one person. So he lives out in Georgia now. He's retired, and I'm trying to get him on the podcast, but I just can't find them because he doesn't want to be bothered no more.
Oh my goodness.
Retired. But I have a connection, but I think one day I'll get him on. Number two was during my CDI years. His name is Dr. Cecil Limhoko. I've done a podcast with him, but the story is that he really opened my eyes on the clinical side. And mm-hmm. so he has a phrase, it's called the clinical truth. And so now he's trademarked that because of me, because I told him, if you don't trademark this, I'm going to take that. I'm going to make a shirt. So he trademarked that everything. And now that's his. So I say, like, okay, good. Wow. So well, anyways, the clinical truth opened my eyes because, you know, it's a premise that if you follow the clinical truth in your documentation, it will withstand scrutiny. When you're talking mm-hmm. about scrutiny, you're talking about any audit, any review. If the documentation falls under the clinical truth, it's gonna stand firm. So I'm like, oh, okay. And so that helped me out understand the severity of illness, risk of mortality, utilization, resource consumption, all of that. That helped me a ton. Third person is actually very recent. His name is Jim Zellum. And so Jim Zellum is a retired engineer, process engineer who has a blog. It's called youarejustthenumber.com. That's youarejustthenumber.com. That's how he says it on his podcast. Anyways, so his brother, Dr. John Zellum, mm-hmm. he called me up. He says, can you have my brother be on the podcast to promote his book called The Stepping Stones of Leadership, which I have here. He signed a copy right over nice. Here. So he sent me that. Anyways, we did the interview and I think it's like he helped me understand there's a difference between management and leadership, right? Yes. So there's a fine line. And so I still struggle with it because I'm like, you know, there's a certain thing about it. But anyways, he's a great resource. He helped me out with that. But in return for kind of like opening my eyes a bit, I helped him out with his podcast. And so he ran with it. It's the same way with you. You ran with it. He mm-hmm. ran with it. He did everything and he's just flying by. And because of that, I got on his podcast episode and then he gave me he signed the copy. I think he signed it right here. See? So, yes. So I'm still in the process of reading that, but leadership is like, you know, something that I think people have imposter syndrome. Like I'm not a leader. I'm not a good manager, but after what you kind of talk yourself through and what you've done and what you've been doing, mm-hmm. you are in actuality a leader. It's just, you just never realized that. And I'm mm-hmm. hoping this book kind of will make me realize what I'm actually doing and where does it fall under in terms of leadership. So those are the three people that so far have been influential. There's a lot of people, but I have to stick to three, right?
I'm seeing another interview with Brian.
Yep.
I am going to encourage my listeners, please, any questions, send it and we will have, I'm volunteering you, Brian.
Mm. Okay, no problem.
Thank you all so much for tuning in and listening to this is, guys, the first part of my interview with Brian. So please stay tuned for our next episode where we get to finish our interview. We'll see you then. We'll catch you then. Bye.